This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. The conversation we're going to have today is not about me, but I'm going to kick it off by talking about my experience as a white male and a lover of the great outdoors. If I want to go on a hike by myself anywhere in the state, I can do that. If I want to backpack and camp in the backcountry, no problem. If I'm out there by myself, nobody gives it a second thought. If I wanted to hike at night, sure, there are a few places where that's not allowed, but there are places I could do that if I wanted to, without fear. The point is, I don't have to worry about anything getting in my way of my nature fix. The woods is my happy place, and I can go there whenever life affords it. But the same cannot be said about everyone. Today we'll have a conversation about being black and brown in Indiana, specifically while enjoying our many beautiful parks, forests, and nature preserves. Joining me via Skype is Janita Castro. She's a representative with the national nonprofit Outdoor Afro, which connects people of color to the outdoors. Hi, Janita.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Megan Gunn, a student recruiter for Purdue's Department of Forestry and Natural Resources. Welcome to you, Megan.
Thank you, Matt. Happy to be here.
And finally, George Lyle is a Lafayette-based attorney and IT security risk analyst and a lover of the outdoors. George, thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And we would love to hear from you this hour, especially if you are a person of color. What do you have to think about before you take a trip? Is there anywhere you just won't go? Or if there's an experience you'd like to share that illustrates today's topic, please do so. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. Janita, let's start by introducing Outdoor Afro. Can you just tell us a little bit about the group?
Sure. Outdoor Afro, as you mentioned, is a national nonprofit, and we focus on creating inspiring Black connections with nature. This is work that we have been doing for over a decade. We have 90 volunteer leaders across the country that take about 40,000 people a year on events, hiking, biking, fishing, you name it. And we are rooted in building community in nature, which makes us a pretty special organization, is when Black folks can come in community with one another and feel safe and protected and know that they're going to have an enjoyable time out in nature. And they can do that with one another. And our leaders are experts at that.
Would you say that advocacy is on the list of Outdoor Afro's mission, or is it simply about connecting people who look like you to the outdoors?
Now, advocacy absolutely is part of what we do. It's an outcome of what we do anyway. As you gather, you know, Black people outside to enjoy nature, you are advocating for yourself and for others. But we also do have an advocacy part of what we do in going to D.C. to lobby for certain bills for protection of public lands, for local ordinances, for bike lanes in Oakland and things like that. So it's definitely a part of what we do.
How'd you get involved?
I actually was looking to go hiking in where I live. I'm based in the Carolinas. And it was just, I started searching, and I was searching for a group that had people that looked like me in it. I couldn't find one. And I stumbled upon Outdoor Afro, and I noticed that they didn't have a community in the area. And I just liked and followed the page and let it go. And then one day there was an opportunity to apply to be a volunteer leader, in which I did. One of the most extensive interview processes that I've ever gone to and have been through to be a volunteer leader for an organization, and that's for good reason. Our leaders are amazing, and was accepted to be a volunteer leader. And then I was actually chosen to go on a trip with the Sierra Club to the Arctic Refuge. And that was a 10-day rafting trip up the Hula Hula River, and was asked to come back and tell my story from a Black perspective of being in the Arctic. So it just kind of snowballed from there. And it's been an amazing few years working directly with Outdoor Afro in this capacity.
I want to hear about the trip in the Arctic, but I want to come back to this interview process. Why was it so extensive?
Well, I know now the reason is because, you know, Rue Matt, who started Outdoor Afro as a kitchen table blog, you know, over 10 years ago, was entrusting people to take care of other people in experiences that were maybe new for those people, going hiking or climbing or fishing or rafting, and also making sure that those people that she was entrusting with the brand of Outdoor Afro were the right kind of people. And that's really important when you're building an organization, especially a not-for-profit, and maybe you can't fly all over the country and do all the events yourself, that the people that were joining the organization were really steadfast in the mission and the belief in it. And that included, you know, online interviews, face-to-face interviews, social media check, background check. They actually called references. I know lots of jobs don't even call references anymore, but Outdoor Afro goes through a very diligent process. And, you know, in fact, we turned down about 70% of people who apply to be a volunteer leader. That's how sought after being part of Outdoor Afro is in that space.
What are a lot of the reasons that people end up getting turned down? Do you know?
It really becomes part of just, there are things that the organization needs at the time. There are places that we want to focus on. We had a big focus on making sure we had presence in Birmingham one year, the Northeast a presence. We wanted to, you know, get rooted back in the Pacific Northwest again. So there's those reasons. We also want people that are kind of the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, right? You don't have to have an outdoor education or an outdoor degree or even any sort of outdoor heavy training. What we want you to do is be people that can build community in nature and build and understand, you know, what's going on in your local community, in your local city, because main part of what you're doing is gathering folks and making sure that they feel included in the events that you're doing. And so we look for people who have those specific skills. And we can't bring everybody on either. That's just the nature of running an organization. You can't bring everybody on. So we're very selective.
Right. We're talking about being Black and brown and enjoying the great outdoors in Indiana and elsewhere, of course. And we would love your input on the conversation. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. And we have a panel of guests to talk about their experience. And Janita, I do want to hear about the Arctic trip in a little bit. Well, let's introduce our other guest, George. Can you tell me what you like to do outside? Where do you frequent?
You know, my wife and I, we love to hike. We've hiked in North Carolina, California. We were told when we went to the Grand Canyon that we were part of the 5% that actually go in the thing when we went down into the Grand Canyon. So anywhere where we can see the world, see nature on our own 2 feet.
What about frequent spots here in Indiana? What do you like to visit?
You know, I went to undergrad down at IU in Bloomington, so I'm a big fan of Brown County State Park and the Hoosier National Forest. And in the northern half of Indiana, there's Mound State Park, which is nice. And Purdue actually runs a few, I don't know if they're privately owned or just university owned, but there are some small woodland spaces that they run for the forestry department. And quite a few of those have either hiking or bike trails that are pretty accessible.
And speaking of Purdue's forestry department, Megan, your affiliation with the outdoors is a little more professional. What would you say is your area of expertise?
So for the last 7 years, I've been managing an aquatic ecology research lab. And we focus mainly on looking at streams that run through agricultural fields. And so a lot of what I've been doing a lot of my experiences in nature have to do with going to different stream sites and going to different field sites and the different interactions that happen between our endpoint and back on campus.
Where does this take you? Does it take you all over the state, or are you focused on a certain area?
It takes us all over the state. I have been to the tippy top of the Wabash near Ohio to the very bottom at the Ohio River. So all over the state.
Janita, I do want to hear about your Arctic trip. So was this the first trip that you ended up taking with Outdoor Afro or leading? Were you leading?
No, I was not leading. I was to get invited by the Sierra Club. So it was, and this was, it was actually my first backpacking adventure. I decided, let me just go all in. If I'm going to do it, let's just go big or go home. So, yeah, so it was an incredible experience to see the caribou migrating to, I think we saw a couple grizzlies, Arctic fox, which was very exciting. What was interesting is that I was the only mother. I was one of two women. I was the only one that was approaching 40 and the only mother on the trip. So it was an interesting dynamic. And also one of the only like non-outdoorsy people on the trip. Well, which is part of the process, right? Is to understand, while not everybody's ever going to get there, but for me to be able to, from a layperson's terms, take that experience and talk about connectivity, no matter if you live in Indiana or you live in Alaska, in ways that we're all connected. And then to, you know, connect with the Gwich'in, which are the indigenous folks of the Arctic Refuge. It was just a really life-shifting experience and understanding how things are really all connected, even though they seem really far away.
Did you have to take anything to consideration, you know, being who you are and looking the way you look with regard to this trip? It seems to me, and again, I'm coming from a white perspective, it seems to me like if you're going way out in a remote area that's populated by indigenous people, that you wouldn't have to have, you wouldn't have perhaps the same concerns as you would if you were going into a rural area in a more populated place.
You're exactly right. I mean, I think that was going into the Arctic where there, you know, there's no people outside of the Arctic village where the Gwich'in live. It's really, it's just animals. It's just wildlife. And it's actually very freeing not to have to worry about, am I going to see a Confederate flag? Is, am I going to, you know, am I going to pass a group of white folks who look at me funny or ask me what I'm doing here, which are all things have, that have happened to our leaders in different parts of the country, rural, urban, national parks, public parks. And so being in that wild space was probably the most freeing space I've ever been in.
We will continue this conversation after a break. Today, we're talking about what it means to be black and brown in the great outdoors of Indiana and elsewhere. And we would love to hear your experience, especially if you're a person of color. Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail at 866-476-3881. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we have three guests talking about what it's like to be black and brown in the great outdoors. As always, we would love your questions and comments on the topic. Has being black or brown kept you from enjoying something you love? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We're joined again by Janita Castro. She's the Communications Director for the national nonprofit Outdoor Afro, which connects people of color to the outdoors. Megan Gunn is a student recruiter for Purdue's Department of Forestry and Natural Resources and is a project leader for the Familiar Faces Project. And finally, George Lyle is a Lafayette-based attorney and IT security risk analyst. And we do have a voicemail from a listener named Greg who has a comment on his experience being outdoors. Let's listen.
Hello, my name is Greg. I'm from Rush County, Indiana. When I go out a lot, I see the DNR officers hiding and using their binoculars to watch me while I fish. They'll watch for a while, wait till you catch a fish, and then they'll come and check and see if you have a license. So I understand how people of color must really feel when just their skin color can add to the problem for them. Because no matter where I go in the outdoors, I see a DNR officer hiding and waiting to try to catch somebody at something.
Thank you, Greg. And we, Janita, I do have some statistics for you. And if you have some of your own, feel free to share them. But this comes from The Trek, which is an online backpacking forum focused primarily on the Appalachian Trail. And they've been conducting an annual survey since 2016 about the makeup of thru-hikers on the trail. Since then, around 95% of thru-hikers were white, 2% were Hispanic or Latinx, and the remainder is pretty mixed. However, for 3 out of the 4 years the survey was conducted, there was absolutely no African-American representation. Now, this is a select group of people. We're talking about Appalachian Trail through hikers. This isn't exactly asking who spent a Saturday at a state park recently. But when you hear something like that, does it surprise you at all?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. We know that there are sections of the AT that are not welcoming for folks, right? So we've talked about, you know, Confederate flags. We can talk about monuments. We can talk about the feeling of going into places where you don't see other Black people and what that feels like. Many people feel that at work every day, right? So, you know, taken to the AT on a trek where you don't have a lot of provisions on you is not the easiest thing to do. We had leaders, we had 6 leaders who hiked a portion of the AT, 6 of our Outdoor Afro leaders a few years ago. And these are things that they had to talk about, to discuss, to figure out exit plans, what they would do if this happened, if that happened. It is a lot of emotional and physical stress to want to do something like that and to have to prepare for that and prepare all the contingencies in case you are faced not with just an animal on the trail, but with a person who doesn't want you there.
Janita, I made a mistake in our introduction, and I think it's important to make this distinction, especially to me, a white person, and I'm sure we have plenty of white listeners right now. I said that Outdoor Afro connects people of color to the outdoors. I was wrong about that. What is the distinction you want to bring to light?
So Outdoor Afro is focused on Black people in the outdoors and the Black experience in the outdoors. And there is a very distinct and separate history for Black people and African Americans in this country. And that's where we focus on. And it's really important for our community to know that we that's where we live. That's what we talk about. And, you know, we like to say we are a Black organization. And there's no shifting from that. Now, all people are welcome to join any Outdoor Afro event. You have some great events head by Melinda Spooner in Indiana. But know that when you come to Outdoor Afro, the experience is going to be centered on Black people. And that's an important thing to note.
Okay. Thank you for that. Megan, what has your experience been like traveling to locations? I mean, you work in the field. Being out in the outdoors is part of your job. What have things been like for you going to some of these more rural areas?
Like Janita mentioned earlier, it is nerve-wracking just driving to these locations. A lot of them are in the middle of nowhere, essentially, but you have to drive through these rural towns and seeing the Confederate flag and whatever other signage is up, and it makes me very uncomfortable. There is some comfort being in a Purdue branded truck, but just being a person of color stepping out of a vehicle, sometimes we're like in a gas station and maybe we're not by that signage, and it makes it just a little bit more uncomfortable. And it sounds crazy, I find a little bit more comfort when I have some of our undergrads out in the field with me, or even though I have that authority over our experience that we're our sampling event, but it's just a little nerve wracking being out there because you don't know what people are going to say. And there are a lot of people in these rural places that don't want people of color in their facilities. I will not stop at a gas station going to a field sampling site if I don't see a person of color walking in or out of there. And so I make sure I gas up before I leave campus. There are locations that we have traveled by multiple times that I know I can, if I gas up here, I know I'm safe, but I won't stray on that journey at all.
George, would you say there are places in Indiana that are just off limits for you? I mean, you don't need to name them, of course, but are there places you just probably shouldn't go because of what you look like?
Yeah, there are. And some of them are much closer than people think. I mean, there are Confederate flags flying 5 or 6 miles from my house, you know, and I have the added advantage and disadvantage of also being a man in this situation as well. Because one thing I've discovered is that while being Black automatically labels me as dangerous in some people's eyes, being a man, particularly if I'm alone, labels me as dangerous in a lot of women's eyes. And I have to say, I understand why. So a lot of times I try to make sure that I stick close to my wife or any female friends that I have around me, just so that people know that at least for that group, I'm safe.
We have another listener voicemail. This one is from Norm about his experience in Indiana. Let's listen to that now.
Good afternoon. My name is Norm. I'm calling you from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm a local photographer, my wife and I, and we've traveled to many, many of our different states' parks and county parks and things like that. In some places, we just have to be very careful where we go or even how we move or how we're looked upon, because it can get very derogatory very fast from other visitors and sometimes even the people that work at the parks or locations. So it's different. We have to be on our P's and Q's all the time, especially here in Indiana, especially here in Indiana.
Norm, that gets to the heart of exactly what we're talking about. Thank you for sharing that. And if you have a question or comment for our panel, you can do exactly what Norm did and leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, 866-476-3881, or just get with us on social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. Janita, is that a familiar thing that you just heard from Norm?
It is, and it broke my heart to listen to that. These stories never get easier to hear, and these aren't even stories. These are just the way that, you know, Black folks have to move in the world. And in the intro, there was talk of Christian Cooper and Amy Cooper and the incident, the birdwatching incident in New York, in Central Park, and all he was doing was birdwatching, right? Which many people get to do, and This time was different because it was caught on camera, and she happened to mess with the wrong one. He was an avid bird watcher. He was on the board. He's on the board of a nonprofit that, you know, the Audubon Society of New York, and he had people behind him to lift up that story, and it was caught on camera. You know, Rue Mapp years ago, when she was followed by a white woman in Oakland, California park while out on a national campaign to get local families connected with nature. And the woman followed them and said that they were invasive species and they were bringing dirt into the park.
Wow.
Like these are, and that would probably go viral today if it was caught on camera. So these are things that are happening every day, all the time, and not just in parks. This is a way that Black folks have to move in the world. And listening to what Megan said, it just about, I don't get out of the car and get gas. I feel better. I have a Purdue truck or I have undergrads with me. These are real feelings. And it's important that people understand these and that, again, appreciate you bringing these issues to light, because nature is supposed to be a place of healing. And sometimes it can be a place of terror.
George, we are near now two national parks. One, of course, is in Indiana. We're talking there, of course, about Indiana Dunes National Park, and that's a recent national park. The other closest national park is Mammoth Cave in Kentucky. And have you seen anything near Mammoth Cave that has not made you feel welcome?
Yeah, I have. And I have to say that I have a particular connection to Kentucky because most of my mother's family was born there. And so I'm very familiar with the rural parts of Kentucky. But even on the drive to Mammoth Cave, you see Confederate flags, you know, and sometimes they're in people's front yards. Sometimes they're hanging on storefronts. And, you know, if you want a sign that that's a store you shouldn't go into, if you see that flag, no matter what color you are, just don't give them your business.
But how much of that, how much of that is just giving them what they want? I mean, this is, again, I'm coming from a white perspective here. And so what I want is for people like that to change their mind. But is it that easy? Is it that easy to just go in and talk to them about that? Or is that something that you would absolutely not do?
You know, that all depends. Sometimes I might engage because I'm feeling generous, but that's part of the problem, is that in order to go into a place like that and attempt to change someone's mind, you have to decide that you're going to put yourself at risk of embarrassment or danger or death to walk into a place where someone has outwardly hung a sign saying, I hate you, and try to convince them not to do that. That's like trying to convince a Christian that Jesus isn't real.
Mm. Megan, do you get outside much beyond work?
I don't, and I wish I could, but I don't feel safe. There are a lot of times where I just want to get away and just go out and maybe camp by myself or go on a hike, but it's not safe. And I'm a smaller Black woman. I'm about 5'1", and it's not safe to be outside by yourself.
But I would need it. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I would love to go and just enjoy nature and just it has that natural healing that everybody needs.
Janita, when you hear that, what do you think?
I want Megan to come out with Outdoor Afro so she can feel loved and included. And that's, you know, it's what Megan says is one of the reasons that we exist is so there's obviously the feeling of wanting to go outside alone and having that solace. But there's also the opportunity to go in community so you don't have to bear all that burden on yourself. And that's, again, one of the things that makes Outdoor Afro so special is that, you know, we do what Black folks have been doing for centuries is sometimes we just go and lay our burdens down by the riverside and are able to just feel safe and connected and really let go and not be so on guard because you've got your people around you. So that's what I want. I just want to take Megan and hug her and bring her into our community right now.
Janita, when was your last outdoor adventure?
I currently live in the Carolinas. So when the state parks opened up, I went during the week and I took my 10-year-old son and we went for a hike at Table Rock State Park in South Carolina and played in some waterfalls. And that was about 2 weeks ago. So that was my last kind of outside of my own backyard outing.
And you're our only non-Indiana, our only non-Hoosier on the panel. Do you have to think about the same kinds of things, would you say, as our two Hoosier guests have outlined today?
You know, absolutely. Unfortunately, these feelings that are being shared are not geographic specific. They are national feelings. And people feel them, obviously, in urban centers like New York City. And they feel them in rural centers and everywhere in between, unfortunately.
George, we just heard Megan say that she is not comfortable hiking by herself. She does not go outside much beyond work. What about you? Are you comfortable hiking by yourself?
You know, I am, but only in the daytime, because we've all seen the videos and the stories of what can happen to a Black man at night if he looks suspicious, you know, air quotes, or if someone is just having a bad night and decides to call the police. And that brings up something that I wanted to emphasize. The story about the gentleman in Central Park, you know, it doesn't just happen in rural areas. It happens in urban areas. And it happens even when confronted with people who would go home and think to themselves, well, I'm not racist, or I don't hate Black people. Because if you remember the video that he took of the woman making that phone call, she took great pains to say the politically correct census term African-American while she was on the phone requesting the police come and do her bidding. Hmm.
And it also gets at this idea, and you and I had a conversation the other day, that you feel Black folks cannot have a bad day. White folks can. And it seemed to me like he, and rightfully so, was agitated by this woman who was calling the cops on him. And it kind of was spurred about by her dog being off leash. And so he was agitated about that. So an okay day out bird watching turned into a not great day. And he was frustrated by the situation. You could hear it in his voice when you see the video. But when I saw that, I thought, well, there's another way you could have handled that. You could have, you know, he could have been nicer, but he doesn't have to. That's the point. He is allowed to have a bad day, but it turned into this whole national conversation where he's concerned. What do you think about that?
And the other thing about that video, reading the backstory on it, is the video only started after he was already agitated. Mm-hmm. Because according to his account and the account that he gave to his sister, he had asked the woman to put her dog on a leash because the area of the park they were in is designated as wild, and there are ground nesting birds that dogs like to chase and eat mm-hmm. and kill.
Yeah.
So when she didn't put the dog on the leash, he pulled out dog treats to try and coerce her another way. She didn't like that, so she put the dog on the leash, grabbed it, started choking it, and then threatened to call the cops to, again, assert her violent will on him because she didn't like being told what to do.
Today we're talking about the difference in experience among black and brown Hoosiers when it comes to outdoor recreation. As always, we would welcome your questions and comments on the topic. We are on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881, and we are back with this conversation in 90 seconds. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we have three guests talking about what it's like to be black and brown in the great outdoors of Indiana and elsewhere. We would love your questions and comments on the topic. Has being black or brown kept you from enjoying the outdoors? We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, to 866-476-3881. Again, 866-476-3881. We're joined again by Janita Castro, Communications Director for Outdoor Afro. Megan Gunn is also with us. She's a student recruiter for Purdue's Department of Forestry and Natural Resources and project leader for the Familiar Faces Project. George Lyle is also with us. He's a Lafayette-based attorney and IT security risk analyst. Megan, let's talk about the Familiar Faces Project. What is it?
So the goal of the Familiar Faces Project is to show students of color that there are people that look like them that work in natural resources. I do that by doing a lot of hands-on activities with them. I post on social media so that we're engaging with them where they are. A lot of students right now are involved in Instagram, and they're on Snapchat and they're on Twitter. And so just trying to connect with them where they are, not necessarily take them out of their comfort zone, but reaching them where they are, and then eventually just showing them that there are people that look like them that are in natural resources.
What kinds of things have you done with groups through Familiar Faces Project?
So we do all kinds of activities. I lead a lot of field days, and so the students are able to either come to campus or I go to where they are, and they rotate through a series of stations where they may learn about small mammals. They may learn about birds, they'll learn about fish, they'll learn about aquatic insects. And so they get to connect with things that they're not usually seeing.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from some of the students who've been through the program?
Oh, they love it. So it's a time for them to experience those things that they've never had a chance to before, right? And so I had a student one year who was near graduation, and she wasn't really sure what she wanted to do once she came to college. And she said that field day really solidified a place in wildlife for her. And so she got to do these experiences. She got to see somebody that looked like her. And she's in our program right now, and she's loving it.
That was going to be my next question. Have you gotten any, I guess, success stories of people who have at least began to make what seems like a career out of this?
Yes, we have. And, I mean, it's one of those projects where we'll see that long-term success in maybe a few years. So you want to connect with students when they're young, because that's when you can make the greatest impact, but you really don't know when that light bulb will come off. So you can go into a classroom where you have seniors that aren't really sure what they want to do, or they're ready to go into business management or something, and they do this hands-on experience, and they're like, actually, this is where I want to be. Nature is for me. And so just trying to make those connections and those impacts wherever we can along the way.
Today we're talking about what it means to be Black and brown and enjoy the great outdoors in Indiana and elsewhere, and we are asking for your questions and comments on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail like Laura did at 866-476-3881. This is Laura with a question for our panel. Let's listen.
Hi, my name's Laura in Brown County, and I'm listening to the show today about Black people enjoying the outdoors. I am a white middle-aged woman, and I camp and hike all the time and love it so much, and it makes me so sad to hear people not being able to enjoy that and feel free to do that. And I was just wondering if there's anything I could do to help with that, go camping or join an organization or anything like that.
Janina, you know, as I was putting this show together, I kind of felt the same way, and I've felt the same way for a long time. I mean, I've heard a lot of conversations about this, and that's why I wanted to try to build an Indiana-focused conversation around this. What can us white people who feel the way she and I do, what can we do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think first it is to always understand that there is lots of Black expertise in nature and in the outdoors. We can hear it, you know, from Megan as she's talking about the work that she does, right? So to understand that and to lift those people up in different ways. And that could be through supporting a local organization. You can support a national organization. You can donate money. You can donate resources. And this gives Black people the space to lift them, you know, to lift up their narrative, right? A lot of, in this time with all that's going on in the world, and I'll speak from the Outdoor Afro perspective, is that we are getting lots of well-meaning intention, people who want to do something. They're feeling, you know, like the caller feels, and Matt, how you feel, like, what can I do? And what we're telling folks is that if you have a platform, give up that space to Black voices. If you have money to donate money to organizations so people can keep doing the work that they already have been doing for years and years and years. And so those are the things I would say. It's to put your, you know, to put what you have to work for the people who are already doing the work.
Janina, I want you to be honest here, and you're a fantastic communicator around this, and so I think I know the answer, but are you tired of having to have these kinds of conversations?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Right? It's important to have these conversations, and the more people that are listening, and I think people are attuned, particularly right now. So these conversations are important to have. It's also important to have conversations about joy and happiness and solutions on things that can be done and things that people are already doing. And so that's important. So those, you know, that's a yes and a yes question.
Let's see, George, along those lines, when I was putting this show together, I'll be honest, I wasn't sure that I was the right person to facilitate this kind of conversation, but being outside is close to my heart. And I don't like the fact, as I've said, that some people can't enjoy it the way that I can through no fault of their own. I appreciate you showing up. There were a lot of guests I reached out to who bowed out for one reason or another. I mean, is this kind of thing awkward to talk about?
You know, it can be. And maybe because of people that they work for. And maybe because they think that having this conversation might make them a target. And I will say that I appreciate you wanting to have this conversation because we need more of that. There are a lot of white people who also don't like or don't want to have these conversations because they think it might make them a target or it makes them uncomfortable. And one point of advice that I could give to your caller, one of the most important things anyone can do who wants to see this change is vote for better candidates. You need to vote for people who explicitly say that Black and brown lives matter and that we are going to make change to institutionalize that thought process. because racism is institutionalized. We need to uninstitutionalize it and put in better systems. And once those things cascade down from the federal to the local level, maybe my son might not be as afraid as I am of going out at night.
We are talking about the difference in experience for Black and brown people in the great outdoors in Indiana. And we are with George Lyle, Lafayette-based attorney and IT security risk analyst, who you just heard. Megan Gunn is also with us. She's a student recruiter for Purdue's Department of Forestry and Natural Resources and is a project leader for the Familiar Faces Project. Janita Castro is with us. She is a representative with the national nonprofit Outdoor Afro. And Janita, I want to shift the conversation a little bit here, and we can come back to where we've been, but I want to make sure that we talk about some of the active efforts to increase representation in the outdoors. Is it fair to say that Outdoor Afro isn't just getting people, getting Black people outside? You're also introducing the outdoors to some people who have never fully experienced it?
Well, what I would say is more that is that people experience the outdoors in very different ways. And there has been a very mainstream way of what the outdoors looks like to people, right? The outdoors looks like, probably Matt, looks like you in the backwoods, climbing a mountain with the backpack and all the right gear and all the right shoes and all that. That's kind of the image that gets conjured up. And we have to remember that Black folks have had a connection with nature forever, right? At Outdoor Afro, we like to say that Harriet Tubman was like the original Outdoor Afro. As she's leading people to freedom, she had to know the call of the birds and the way the stars moved and the way the waters flowed, right? So that connection with nature is always there. Now, in the work that we do, maybe we're introducing some other aspects of outdoors to people. People's their first time maybe rock climbing or their first time kayaking, but there is always this intrinsic core that Black folks have always been connected with nature. So it may be just a reintroducing of nature because maybe there was an experience that was frightful and they didn't want to go out again or something to that effect, or a fear as a child not learning how to swim. Maybe your grandparents or your parents weren't allowed to go to beaches or to go to swimming pools, so you never learned how to swim, so then you're not going to go kayak, right? So it is maybe reintroducing people and reconnecting them, not that they've never been connected before.
We have a couple of comments on social media I want to get to. This is from Joseph Lee on Facebook, who says, I live in South Bend, Indiana. I'm not Black, but I have seen police park near families of color in our local parks. And when a person of color approaches the police car, the police drive away. I've seen this many times. It angers me. They're supposed to protect all of us. And then we have another comment from Des on Twitter, who says, I've been around Brown County, but doing outdoor activities never seemed like something that was for me. I'd like to do trail running and hiking around Michiana and elsewhere. I just purchased 100 parks, 5,000 ideas for inspiration. Janita, is this something that is just not on some people's minds just because of the exact barriers that we've been talking about this hour?
Well, it's just a level of privilege, and it's just understanding the privilege that you have that you don't have to deal with those things. And who would want to deal with those things? And if I don't have to deal with it, and if I don't have to know about it, and if I don't have to experience it, then, you know, I may not dig deep and kind of understand more if I don't have to, right? But that's, you know, that's a privilege that we're seeing, you know, people start to confront all across the country.
We have another listener voicemail. This one's from Leonard with a comment on his experiences in West Lafayette. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Leonard. I live in West Lafayette, Indiana, and I'm a member of the Wabash River Biking Club, African-American, and a teacher. But I cannot ride alone out here biking, and I take my grandson with me to teach him how to bike, and I have to advise him that he can't ride alone out here. We have some wonderful bike trails, and you don't have to ride in the streets. You have to be careful, particularly if you ride in the streets, because people with pickup trucks, white people with pickup trucks, with flags in the back, and will try and run you over. Nobody's going to help you out here. So it's a horrible thing to be an avid bike rider. I ride with my bike club almost always because riding alone is a threat to my life. I have to also advise my young grandson how to ride by virtue of the reality of uncivil people who are racist in Lafayette. Thank you very much.
George, you're from the Lafayette area. Megan is as well. But George, I mean, I'll ask you as a black man, does that resonate with you?
It does. And I think I've seen one of the trucks he's talking about. Mm. They also coincidentally happen to have Trump 2020 stickers on them as well.
Megan, you may not have hard numbers in front of you, but what does minority representation look like in your field, the natural resource science field?
I do not have numbers in front of me, but it's low. I'm sure it's less than 10%. As professionals in the field, it's very low.
And Janita, when I think of the people who really head into the outdoors, and this kind of gets at something we were talking about earlier, people who really put forth the effort to go far and be in remote places, I'm usually picturing very open-minded people, the kind of people who would be fine with seeing anyone out there, no matter what they look like. You've talked about taking into consideration the areas on the way to where you might lead a trip. And of course, there's a threshold kind of just beyond the parking lot in a lot of places sometimes where a lot of people might not go any further, the majority of the public. Would you say that beyond that threshold, when you get into the backcountry, you feel a little better? You feel a little less uneasy, a weight off of your shoulders when you really get into the woods? Or does it always kind of feel, is your head always on a swivel?
I think you always have to be prepared and ready and have your head on a swivel. You just, you know, the Arctic is one place, right? There's no people there, right? There's literally no people out there.
Right.
You know, the backcountry is, you could come across anybody or at any moment. And so you always, unfortunately, you always have to be prepared.
George, I'd like to end on a positive note. What would you say is among your top outdoor experiences? Bonus points if it was in Indiana.
You know, I have one in Indiana and one elsewhere. In Indiana, one of the greatest pleasures is just going to one of the small patches of woods right by my house and just standing out there by myself. But if everyone in the country could take the opportunity to go to Muir Woods north of San Francisco, if anybody's a fan of Lord of the Rings or Aragon or any other fantasy series, or even if you grew up with fairy tales as a kid, when you drive up to that place and you see the redwoods popping up out of the valley as you turn the corner, it's one of the most magical things you'll ever see.
Mm. Megan, you're next. I know that you spend time in the outdoors primarily as a professional, but and I don't know, this may not be your story, but a lot of the people who are in the natural resources field get into it because they love the outdoors. Do you have a similar experience that really kind of hooked you on it?
So I grew up near Lake Michigan. I'm from the region and grew up near the dunes. And so we spent a lot of time growing up just running down Mount Baldy when it was open and looking at different critters that were in the lake and hiking those trails. And that was what really got me hooked growing up.
I want to thank all of our guests today. This has been a great conversation, and I really appreciate it. Janita Castro is a representative with Outdoor Afro. It's a national nonprofit which connects black people to the outdoors. Janita, thank you so much for your time today and your perspective.
Thank you for having me, and we hope that folks who are listening and want to connect with Outdoor Afro can do that via Meetup. And there are events still going on, some virtual and in person, some soon. So please join us.
Thank you. And Megan Gunn, student recruiter for Purdue's Department of Forestry and Natural Resources and with the Familiar Faces Project. Thank you, Megan. And finally, George Lyle is a Lafayette-based attorney and IT security risk analyst and a lover of the outdoors. George, thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for having this conversation.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In.